From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on December 3rd when New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof wrote a piece called Abusing the Chickens We Eat. That piece sparked a new focus on the conditions of animals and whether we can trust advertising. We'll explain more in a moment. This hour on Connections, we're reaching out to local farms to find out how animals are raised, how they're treated, what the conditions are, what the standards are, what certain terms mean when we see them on a label. We've heard from Wegmans as well. We'll get some of their comments. And my guest in studio for the hour is Dennis LaPelle from Lakestone Family Farm in, it's Farmington, isn't it?
Farmington,
you
yes.
You are in Farmington.
We are in Farmington, physically located, yes.
Very good. And Dennis has been on the program before. I joked with Dennis this hour that if I had you on again this year, I'd have to pay you. You've been on so much. But in this case, I was a little surprised, Dennis, because I read the piece by Nicholas Kristof on December 3rd. In fact, I think about a dozen of our listeners forwarded it to me and said, wow. And I thought, you know, I instantly wanted to investigate the way chickens are raised in local farms because we have this bounty of remarkable local farms. There aren't a whole lot of people raising chickens around here, or at least on smaller scale, easily sort of measured and observed ways. It's interesting.
Well, there's a few of us that are, you know, scattered throughout, and some, you know, there's a little bit of competition for us at our markets. But then there's also a lot of people that do it truly small scale and sell or, you know, work with friends and neighbors, which is equally as good as, you know, going to a market and buying from another vendor.
For our listeners, if you have questions about the way food is raised, and we're kind of targeting chickens this hour based on the New York Times piece, but we're going to talk about those standards, and your questions can be answered if you want to call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I reached out and unfortunately could not hook up a good time to bring Autumn's Harvest Farm on. Tim Hawes down in Autumn's Harvest Farm in Romulus is a farm that I remember back in 2009. My wife and I were invited to come out and just, you want to see what we do? Come see what we do. And for anybody who's read Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan, you might have read about Joel Salatin's farm in, where is he, Virginia, Dennis? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, he's in Virginia.
He's in Virginia. And I remember thinking in 2009, Tim Hawes' farm looks like a small-scale version of the Salatin farm. I mean, you had, you know, the animals rotating on grasses. We're going to talk about, again, what rotational it really means and the differences in standards. But let me do this. Let me back up and play a clip for you. What sparked this entire discussion? Well, it was an ad from Purdue. Purdue being the company that, I'm sure, the biggest chicken producer in the country, right?
I think they're second or third.
Oh, they're second or third?
I think Tyson might be
larger than Purdue. Oh, yes, okay.
But it's, I mean, they're all really categorized the same way. They're all doing, you know, the same practices, and we've seen videos like these before.
Okay, well, hold on. There's two different videos, and we're going to start with the first one. This is an ad that Purdue put out to say, hey, you got to love the chickens you eat. You got to be good to them. Let's listen.
I think consumers today have a distrust of big companies, of corporations, you know, and you know, our job is to educate the consumers about what we do. My dad always taught us one line, that is, do the right thing. And he said, if you treat your people right, you produce quality products, the company will grow. Doing the right thing is things like treating your chickens humanely, doing the right thing is raising them cage-free, that the nutrition is all veggie diet, including corn, soybeans, and marigolds. It's the combination of all of those things that result in a better tasting product. And no matter what the regulations are that come out, it won't make any difference because we're doing the right thing and we're transparent. Today, the consumer is much more interested in knowing how the chickens are raised, what they've been eating, before it gets to their table. And it's about trust and trusting the company, and that's something that we've always stood for.
That is Jim Purdue from Purdue, the company that put out this video. And frankly, you can hear what he's saying, but it's even better if you watch the video because those chickens look so happy. They're eating their food. They're, you know, it's good life.
Yeah,
it's a good life for those chickens.
Well, it's funny watching that. I did watch it again before I came, and I do remember when it was airing on TV and thinking how crazy it was. that it was so misleading. But then I remember, you know, I watched it the other day, and most of the time when they're walking, you did only see one shot of chickens. Any other time he was on the chicken farm, he was walking outside the barns. And it's nice that he was able to get outside to get some fresh air. It's too bad it's not the same for the chickens.
Well, we're going to talk about the difference when he says chickens, our chickens are cage-free. There's a big difference between pigs and chickens when it comes to cage-free, for example. But anyway, before we even get there, let me explain what happened. So this ad comes out. Purdue wants you to know their chickens are happy, their chickens are eating good food. You can feel good about that. Well, something interesting happened. Craig Watts is a farmer who is contracted to raise chickens for Purdue. And he's watching this video, and he did not feel good about it. He's 48 years old. He's in North Carolina. He raises about 720,000 chickens each year for Purdue. So again, almost 750,000 chickens. And they essentially give him the rules. He raises them in the rules that Purdue sets. When he saw that ad, according to the New York Times, his jaw dropped, and he invited an organization called Compassion in World Farming to come with their cameras to document how Purdue chickens really are raised. They put out a video, and again, you're only going to hear the audio. I certainly recommend seeing the video as well, but let's listen to part of what they put out.
Normal for more than 1,000 birds in a house of 30,000 chickens. It's considered normal for more than 1,000 birds to die in every flock due to illness, genetic problems, or other issues. Craig has no control over the health or genetics of the chicks that are delivered to him by Purdue. Bound by contract, Craig is not even allowed to give them sunshine or fresh air. Just 37 days later, they are a sea of panting birds. Panting indicates birds are overheated. These birds find it too painful to bear the weight of their unnaturally large breasts on their legs and spend the majority of their time squatting. Their heart and lungs are also physiologically taxed, overburdened by servicing their disproportionately large chests. There is nothing natural or humane about this scene. As a result of growing so big so quickly, these baby birds, only weeks old, spend much of their time sitting on the litter. Many suffer from lameness, limping, and other leg problems. The litter contains the feces of tens of thousands of birds, which they sit on nearly continuously toward the end of their lives.
Again, that is just part of the video put out by Compassion in World Farming after they were contacted by farmer Craig Watts when Craig told them, don't listen to that ad from Purdue. That is not. And Dennis LaPelle is in studio with us, a local farmer from Lakestone Family Farms that I wouldn't have invited Dennis if I didn't really respect the way they handle their practices, and their chickens also are delicious, which is another question. But Dennis, when you see that video and you see the chickens, they've got these open sores on their chest, no feathers. Their breasts are huge, and they, as illustrated in the video, I mean, a lot of them look like they can't even stand, and they're bred or raised that way for that reason?
Yeah, we use similar breed of chicken. It's not exactly the same because they, companies like Purdue, they produce their own. But we get ours from smaller hatcheries. There's one here in New York State that I've used in the past, it's basically a crossbreed. It's two different birds that are bred together to make what's known as the Cornish cross, and those are the birds that people are generally accustomed to eating. If I were to raise a lot of heritage breed chickens as meat birds, there's a huge amount of work that it would take to sell that bird because the consumer is used to that large breasted white meat chicken. So we do raise a similar breed, but the way that we raise the birds is a polar opposite of the way that you see it in these houses.
All right, first of all, in that video, to me, that's animal abuse. Is that abuse to you?
Yeah, I don't like those practices at all. Seeing videos like that when I was younger is one of the things that spurred me to get into farming.
So when we talk about cage-free, Jim Purdue said, our chickens are cage-free. And a lot of people hear that and they think it means something.
It means something if it's an egg-laying hen. They never use cages for meat chickens. So cage-free doesn't really mean anything. And then there's other, if you're considering your eggs, that's when you want to look for cage-free because then you know that animal has the ability to walk around and roam. More important things on the label to look out for are when they say things like all vegetarian diet. That is an indicator that the birds don't set foot outdoors. An animal that's raised outdoors on pasture is going to have the ability to scratch for bugs and things like that. So an all-vegetarian diet, the bird's not eating worms and bugs and all those other things that give it a nice diverse diet.
So an all-vegetarian diet sounds nice to somebody walking down the aisle of a grocery store. That's their way of coding. This animal's not outside.
Right, and I think it's also in response to an article that was out years back. I'm not great with citing things like this, but there was rumors around saying they were feeding the wasted animals back to the chickens, and I think that's when this whole term vegetarian diet came up, is to, you know, say that that's not what they do, which so I wouldn't doubt that.
All right, so they're refuting that claim. You wouldn't doubt what?
I wouldn't doubt. I would doubt that they would have been feeding the wasted animals. I mean, I would hope they wouldn't do anything like that, but I don't have any knowledge of it, to tell you the truth.
Okay, so. But they're still, as we saw in that video, being raised with less than a square foot of space. They're crowded. They are standing on layer upon layer of feces that don't even get cleaned after, after one essentially order of chickens is gone. And does it matter to us as consumers if they're standing on feces?
Well, you have to think about it in terms of the it's not just the feces, but it's also the ammonia that comes with that from the excrement. And that animal's now on this litter, and it's kicking up dust, and the ammonia's in the air, and it's breathing it in. And anything we breathe in, it goes into the bloodstream. So that is physically in the animal. So in the meat that you're eating essentially some of that waste. You know, that it goes, how could it not? I mean, you and I, when we're someplace, we try to avoid a smell that seems caustic or harmful to us and our families. It's, you know, the same thing for the animals that we raise. We want to make sure that our animals are raised in you know, a humane standard, you know.
So Purdue is doing this, and other companies are doing this, because volume, right? You can do 720,000 chickens a year at one farm if you do it this way.
Right. And that's 720 times the amount of chickens we do at
our farm. I was going to ask you, how many at Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington, how many chickens a year do you?
1,000.
1,000.
And that was, this season was our first season at that level. So we did 1,000 birds. And we're really, at this point, we're limited by our processing. So that's why we do 1,000. But it's a manageable amount.
Tell me about the conditions for your chickens.
Okay, so you know, the chicken's life cycle is really two stages. It's the brooding, and then there's the pasturing. So
I don't know that. I don't know that most of us do. So
you know, chickens come by way of U.S. Mail, go to the post office and pick them up, and we brood them. So for the first 2 weeks, we raise them in a heated indoor space on litter that gets freshened every day. We add a fresh layer of litter, and the birds are grown indoors for about 2 weeks until they're sturdy enough and healthy enough to stand on their own outdoors. And then the method that we use is called a chicken tractor for pasturing. So it's a 100 square foot cage where we house 40 to 50 chickens. So that's, you know, 1.5 square foot per bird to 2 square feet per bird, which is 3 times the industry standard. And we move those on grass every single day. I move them. And in the last week of the life, we generally move them twice a day.
They have enough space to walk if they want somewhere.
Oh, they do. They walk around. It's partial sun, partial shade. The way they're designed is it allows for them to be in the breeze if they want, out of the breeze if they want. It's 3/4 of the roof is covered, so they can be in the shade. 1/4 is open if they want to be in the sun. There's water. There's feed. But the feed is another interesting contribution to the chickens. That we practice a method called feed restriction. So our chickens don't get that girth of breast meat like a lot of other chickens that are raised in those houses do. So we give our birds a certain amount of feed once a day. When that's gone, it encourages them to forage on pasture. So that it's basically like taking a kid to an all-you-can-eat buffet. If there's loads of sweets out at the same time as there's, you know, healthier selections, they're going to go for the sweet stuff first. They're going to eat as much as they can of the, you know, the stuff that they like versus going for the less palatable to them, which is grass. They'd rather eat grain than they would grass. So as long as they have grain, they're not going to eat grass or as much grass. I can't say they won't eat it. So what we do is we offer only a limited amount of grain. When that's gone, it encourages them to eat more grass and bugs. So our birds as a result, you know, don't get as large either. They're able to stand. It kind of lends to a smaller bird and smaller yield for us. But you know, the following we've gotten now at the market has been pretty favorable for what we're doing.
Have customers ever complained that the breast size that you're selling is not what they usually expect or they see at a supermarket?
I don't think so. I think it's batch to batch. Some, you know, everybody's looking for a different size bird. So when we're selling whole chickens, you know, people have a general size that they're looking for, whether it be 3.5, 4.5, or 5 pounds, you know. And if I don't have a particular size, then they can be frustrated if they're trying to feed a certain number of people. But as we bring in, we're not bringing in birds every single week, but we are slaughtering every single week. So from week to week, our birds are going to be different sizes.
They follow, on Autumn's Harvest Farm, and I think on Salatin's Farm, they follow the cows. It's kind of a rotational situation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's a holistic management thing where, mm-hmm. And we do a similar sort of method with our vegetable program with the chickens. But so the idea there is that the chickens will go around and they'll break up the cow patties, and that'll help it prevents just a lot of work.
It's a natural fertilization?
Exactly. It's okay. A natural fertilization. The chickens are getting the seeds out of the dung. They're going after beetles or anything, other type of bug that
Which is good
flies
for them?
Absolutely. It's kind of lends to that diverse diet. I don't have cows at my farm.
Right.
We just don't have enough space for it, enough good land. And so as part of good husbandry would go is I'm not going to take in animals that I can't adequately care for. So what we do instead is we use our chickens to prep our fields for vegetables. So we'll run an acre a year in pasture. We'll run chickens over that twice within the year. And the following season, we'll plow that field up, and that's where we'll grow our vegetables. We'll bring that new acre into production for vegetables. And now this year, we're taking an acre out of production from vegetables, and we're in turn putting our chickens back on there as a way to restore some of the lost nitrogen in the soil from the vegetable production.
Are your chickens more expensive as a result of the way you do it?
Yes, and we do kind of come across a lot of resistance to our pricing at market, and I would say some people complain that it's just too expensive. And I don't disagree. It is too expensive. But given the consideration of what we're doing, it's not. I mean, it's maybe not that our chicken is too expensive, it's that conventional chicken is too inexpensive.
I think that's the distinction. People are used to the prices that those standards allow. And it seems like it's become a theme on this program of late, but we are voting with our wallets, our values, right?
Absolutely.
If we're not understanding where our food comes from, we're looking for the cheapest source at every turn, then we probably shouldn't be surprised when these conditions become more widespread.
Well, yeah. When you're making things less expensive, that's going to come from somewhere. You know, I hate to coin an expression, but you get what you pay for. You know, and that goes with everything. You know, if you don't want to put the money into what you're buying, you're going to get maybe a more inferior product.
We're going to get to your phone calls coming up here. I see the phone ringing. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And if you're just joining us, our guest for the hour is Dennis LaPelle, a farmer from Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington. We're talking about the standards of the animals that we eat, based largely on Nicholas Kristof's piece on December 3rd in the New York Times. Very easy to find if you just Google abusing the chickens you eat. You not only will see the piece he did, but links to the videos as well. And I asked Dennis, you know, about other providers, you know, because our listeners may say, hey, I want to purchase chickens. If we're going to eat chicken, I want to purchase as local as we can and with standards that we can appreciate. So you've got Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington, but where else do you go? I mentioned Autumn's Harvest Farm in Romulus. That's a long way for my wife and I, and we go there, or sometimes they come to us, or they come to Rochester.
Right.
Who else out there doing chickens?
Who else is doing well? I share market space with a few other folks. Happy Hooves Organic Farm raises chickens.
Where are they?
I don't know exactly where she's located.
Happy Hooves.
You have Honey Hill Farm raises chicken.
We're going to hear from Fred Forsberg, their farmer, coming up here.
Fisher Hill Farm raises chicken. There's Oh, there's quite a few of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you sort of have to choose to look for it.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's not the sort of thing that's readily available, and the cost of the chicken often makes it difficult to stock on a store shelf. If you're a store, I'm sure that you can find some good option. I would hope you could. I haven't been to Hearts yet, but I would hope that you could find some good options in a place like that.
It's a good point. I've been to Hearts a number of times, but I haven't looked at the way they do chicken. It's a good question.
I tend to not look at those things anymore because
got your own, right?
That's right.
Yours are in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly. So I really should do a little more market research in that area just to catch myself up. But I don't know where to tell people to go. I mean, know your farmer is really what it comes down to.
Yes.
And I understand that's not a reality for everybody, but there's a whole backlog of reasons why that it's obviously because, you know, it's very expense prohibiting. So that there's a lot of people that couldn't realistically afford it. And I mean, there's people that struggle to afford conventional meat as well, you know? So the fact that ours is, I would say, probably 2 to 3 times the price of what you're going to find as a conventional chicken, it can be troublesome, and it can be a hard sell for me at times.
Well, that's part of changing a societal expectation and a culture. And I want to also say we did reach out to Wegmans, and they tell us they are very concerned about this issue. They're very concerned about the way animals are raised, and we're going to read more about the way they approach the issue in our second half hour. Let me get to the phones, and this is Mike in Livonia. Mike, you're on Connections. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call again, Evan. I happen to know Fred Forsberg. He lives down the street from me here in Livonia at Honey Hill Farm on Price Road.
We're going to have a conversation with Fred in our second half hour on this program, yep.
And he's an ex Xerox guy. He worked for a big company, Xerox, and kind of, you know, his management style, he pushed himself out in a way that he does things now, you know, in a humanistic, is a term I just kind of discovered, where, you know, you just do everything the right way, like they say in that ad that you just played, but not practice in reality at some places. But he, like this other gentleman, sound like, you know, that's what they do. I've been watching him build the garden and the greenhouses and the pond, and he moves them around just the same way. And what piqued my interest was when you said the cost is so much more. And some of the research I've been doing, it keeps suggesting the government in general keeps subsidizing these large-scale, corporative, central planning sort of ways of doing things to get the most bang for the buck. And what they're in essence doing is they're subsidizing a crappy diet, to not find any better word, for these chickens that gorge them, in the same way the government's been doing the same to the human population by just feeding them grains and soy and corn and grains and wheat. And it's ironic to see the two of them parallel. They're both two-legged animals, chickens and humans, and we're both becoming obese in unhealthy ways. And the healthiest way is more expensive, but it's a way that we keep, you know, overlooking because the government says this is better, so we all just do it.
Yeah. Well,
it's odd. It's odd to see happen and hilarious at the same time, but, you know, that's why I live in Livonia.
Well, Mike, thanks for the call. Your neighbor's going to be on the program in the second half hour. Let me let Dennis respond to that because Mike's making the point about and we could probably do an entire discussion on ag policy, subsidization of big ag. Do you want to weigh in at all on that, Dennis? You don't have to.
I don't really like to go down that road. It gets very political, and I try to keep my politics to myself as best I can.
You are not heavily subsidized by the government. Is that fair to say as a small farmer?
I'm not heavily subsidized, but others would argue that I am subsidized to some degree. So.
Okay. All right. See? So an upstanding citizen, but that's another day. But Mike raises interesting points. And ag policy in the macro, another day. And absolutely, Mike, that's one that we will revisit. This is Monica in Rochester. Go ahead, Monica.
Hi. My question relates to the earlier discussion about hens and their diet. So I've been purchasing eggs with a vegetarian diet for a while now. And your guest's comments would definitely make me reconsider that choice. But part of the reason that I started doing that was that the other organic eggs seem to have a fishy taste to them, as if they were maybe fed omega-3s or something. And I'm wondering if there's some way to get around that issue. And also, if he knows anything about what causes that, I would certainly be grateful for that information.
Monica, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Dennis. Any thoughts on that?
I've never fed my chickens omega-3s. I'm not really, I've never had an egg personally that has tasted fishy. Our eggs are certified organic. We do follow the NOFA New York protocol for organic certification for our hens as far as everything that's required for them. We do feed our chickens a grain ration, similar to how we feed our meat birds, a grain ration. When the grain is gone, we look for them to go on to forage. In the wintertime, we feed them leftover pumpkins and winter squash and things like that to just help diversify the diet. We do give them a little bit more grain, but then they're not as active during the winter, so they don't eat as much. But we look to not give our chickens anything that's not basically a freshly grown or, you know, milled grain sort of thing. I personally haven't bought eggs from the store in a long time. Again, I should probably do my market research on this to see what's out there. I do know prices for, you know, some store brand organic eggs falling around $3.75 to $4. Generally, it's a very similar to a conventional egg. As of late, I've been coining my own term, or maybe other people are saying this too, but I call it conventional organic because there is so much organic is such a popular thing now that, you know, there's a lot of big ag doing organic. So it's not necessarily, just because organic doesn't necessarily mean small farm. So what you want to look for, more than just the term organic, I mean, organic is all about inputs. So knowing your farmer would possibly help you with that. If you know, you can have the conversation. You can stand across from them at the market table and ask them what the birds eat, you know, how old the birds are.
And your customers do that for you at Lakestone, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My eggs are pretty well sought after at this point. I just can never seem to produce enough, or my hens, I should say, because I'm not really producing them. And generally, in a three-hour market, they're gone within the first 25 minutes.
And your eggs sell for what?
$5.50 a dozen.
Okay.
$5.50 a dozen we're at.
And that's, you have no problem selling at that price.
No problem at that price point. And it's really, it's not a super profitable thing because of what goes into them. You know, as far as that rotation, we rotate our hens as well. So they're in our we call it the Chickabago. Or and the other one we have is the Holiday Scrambler. They're converted travel trailers, where since they're, you know, they're insulated, they're on wheels, I can hook them up to the tractor and drag them to a new spot on pasture. We put a mobile fence around them to keep predators out, and they work a certain area of land. We use them, you know, through a lot of brush and things like that. They'll eat leaves, and they'll go after the roots to find bugs and worms. Similar sort of thing. Just give them a really diverse diet, and you'll see, you know, a dark orange yolk. I mean, that's really what you want, is a nice rich yolk, and it's a better quality egg.
Does that help, Monica?
It does, although I'm wondering if you have any awareness of, other than the industry, using fish-based products. I mean, is this fish taste just in my head, or?
I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I know that there are some that, you know, there's a lot of claims about omega-3s being in eggs, and, you know, you can buy certain brands that say, you know, more omega-3s, and obviously that's got to be coming from somewhere, and it wouldn't surprise me if there is some sort of fish-based thing in there.
Thanks for the call, Monica. Let's grab Joe in Fairport. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, hello, Evan. How you doing? Hey, Dennis, how you doing? I've known Dennis for some time now. He's a close family friend, and I do purchase his chicken products and vegetables from the farm, and I can say from experience there is a huge difference in the quality level and the flavor, just from an egg to an egg to a chicken to a chicken, and how they're raised. You know, like what Dennis was saying earlier with the last caller about the proteins and egg yolks. I mean, the egg yolk is vibrant. The flavor is fantastic. And, you know, he was talking about the cost when it comes to raising the chickens and purchasing that product. After you try it, you almost feel like the cost is irrelevant. You just feel good about the food you're eating, and you get excited to cook it, and you get excited to know that you're putting something good in your body, that someone put as much care into raising it that way.
But thanks for the call, maybe, Joe. Yeah, great.
Yeah, maybe this is just a good comment on Dennis and his farming practices. He does a fantastic job.
Well, Joe, I greatly appreciate it. I'm sure Dennis does as well. And Dennis, to Joe's point, when you talk to somebody who eats your eggs for the first time, when they see the rich orange color, like you said, as opposed to kind of that pallid yellow that they're used to. Have people commented on the same way that Joe just did?
Yeah, yeah. People are asking me, you know, what do you feed? I even have had a customer, a very good customer who buys through the summer season usually two chickens a week plus a few parts because we cut parts as well, and he says that our product is so good it's suspicious.
Suspicious.
So I really appreciate that, but it's just I think I'm just. You know, I'm dedicated to what I'm doing. I'm following a method that I've set forth that I, you know, beforehand I was hoping that would work out, and it seems to be doing quite well for me.
I thought you were going to say you had a customer ask you what's wrong with your eggs.
I like them. They're good. It's you know, they oftentimes say you can say like if you've been feeding your chickens a lot of brassicas like cabbage and things like that, you can taste it in the eggs. So I wouldn't be surprised, like to that previous caller's comment about the fish oil, if that would be a similar sort of thing.
My guest for the hour is Dennis LaPelle, Lakestone Family Farm in Farmington. And we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and talk about labeling. We're going to hear from Fred Forsberg of Honey Hill Farm. We're going to talk about the approach that Wegmans has and talk about questions on what you read on a food label, what has meaning, what doesn't. We've already touched on that a bit, but more on that and more on the difference in quality as we look at the way our animals are treated. Caring about the conditions of the animals we eat this hour, right here on Member Supported Public Radio. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. This time of year, we're talking a lot about consumerism, retail sales, and the economy. Because it's the Christmas shopping season, it's also Hanukkah. Tuesday, the start of Hanukkah, and it's our annual special program, the Hanukkah Lights Program. Hope you can join us for that on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Abusing the chickens we eat was the story by Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times on December 3rd that sparked this conversation this hour, asking about the conditions for the animals that we eat. So many of us do eat chicken, but so many of us don't really know about the standards. And the premise of that piece that Kristof wrote was that Purdue Farms, Purdue, the big company, that one of the top producers of chicken in the country, put out a promotional video in which Jim Purdue is kind of boasting that their chickens are happy and raised in good conditions. And then one of their farmers, who's contracted by Purdue, came out with kind of an expose video that said, no, they are not telling you the story. These animals are in very bad conditions, and that's why they are so cheap. Well, we're talking to local farmers this hour who have a different way of doing things. From Lakestone Family Farms Farm to Honey Hill Farm, and that's Fred Forsberg. Let's listen to what he said, and not only is this conversation that I had with Fred Forsberg relevant to this conversation, but you're going to hear a little bit more talk about food labeling as well, and that's where we're going next. Let's listen.
People say, well, I don't care how they're treated. Well, I can't even imagine that. Why wouldn't somebody care? Of course we're going to kill them, but we don't torture them. There's no reason to treat an animal that we're going to consume in a vicious or cruel manner. Now, I have different beliefs than others. I have been to farms in Pennsylvania, for example, that claim to be free range. This thing was as big as a football field. I don't know. I was 10 or 20,000 chickens in there. And all the way down at the other end, there's a door. And I says, is that the free range? And the farmer shakes his hand, and I says, do they go out there? And the guy said, are you kidding me? They don't know what's outside. They're scared to go outside. Well, we don't call it free range. We call it pasture raised. But there's two levels of pasture raising. You can put them in little houses that some people call chicken tractors. I don't even like to do that. I want my chickens running. I have shelters that are essentially 8x12, but that's just simply a shelter that they can go in because they don't like the sunlight. You don't see many birds out during the day. The same thing with chickens. Anyway, my feed is on one side, 50 feet away is the water, back and forth all day long. Great exercise. Sun, they said, people, what does the sun do? Well, sun gives us vitamin D naturally. It's also a great natural antibiotic.
your chickens don't look anything like what we saw in that New York Times piece, and I don't mean to make light of it. I don't mean to laugh. I mean, it's not funny. But you were probably also weren't surprised to see that.
Not at all surprised. That's the way it is. I can just tell the listeners, don't pay any attention to the advertising. It's all deceptive. It makes me crazy about the deception in our food system. People coming on saying this and this, this and that. My answer is, we are open and transparent. Don't buy my chicken or beef until you come to see it. We offer anybody an opportunity. We're open and transparent. Come and look everywhere. Ask any question. Don't buy until you're completely satisfied.
And people do come out there, and they do love to look there, don't they?
Yes, they do. We ask that you don't. If you come unannounced, we press you into service. However, if you come, you know, we ask people at Sunday afternoon, you know, it's after market at Brighton. We don't want to jump back in the fray. We say after 2 o'clock on Sunday, make an appointment. We'll show you the whole operation. And we do frequently.
They'll see the animals come right up close, won't they? I mean, do you put them on tractor rides? Kind of a hayride for anybody who wants to see. Huh?
Well, I love a hayride myself. I might be a grown up, but there's nothing the matter with a hayride.
There you go.
And I especially love when children come out. I mean, to see the look on their eyes when we go right out into the pasture with the cattle come right up to us and we feed call carrots right off the wagon. Their eyes are as great and wide. I love to introduce children and adults, quite frankly, to what agriculture should look like.
This question is probably secondary for most people, but I'll ask anyway. Is there a difference in taste and quality between, say, Honey Hill or Lakestone or chickens from Autumn's Harvest Farm, or choose one of those, versus the large operations that Purdue contracts with?
I can tell you, I think there is, but then I have a biased view. I have a variety of great chefs who think our chicken is the best they've ever eaten. Matt Hudson at the Canal House has been buying chickens from us for 6 or 7 years. That's a great high-end restaurant. Christian Uzi at the Rabbit Room in Honey Eye Falls, etc. They say these are the best chickens they've ever eaten.
Let our listeners know where you are. If they haven't been down, because we may have listeners, Fred, who they see this kind of story in the New York Times. They feel like they can't trust labels they just find in a store, and they want to come see an operation. Where are you?
We're honeyhillorganicfarm.com on the web. We've been there for 8 years on the web. We're on the east side of Canisius Lake in Livonia. We're literally 20 minutes south of the thruway.
And when it comes to food labeling, is there a need for better labeling or more transparency? Is it just as simple as saying educate yourself, and if you don't know, find out?
You know, with labeling, of course we need better labeling, but the language is such that it's so deceptive, it's ridiculous. I mean, to the point when they say all natural. You can get all natural flavoring in chicken. Listen, well, we're talking about chicken. It says all natural. You can have it. All the conventional operations, chicken is, the USDA says it can't be more than 11% water by weight. So they add water, salt, and artificial flavoring, artificial chicken flavoring. But the flavoring doesn't have to come from chicken. It comes from corn. Nobody would ever think that. But you could, I don't know how science can get chicken flavor from corn, but they get blueberry and strawberry from corn also. So there's really nothing on labeling that you can do that people will really actually understand because of intentional deception. You must learn.
I guess the easiest way is go to the farm, like just like you said, Fred.
Right.
You
can see I'm passionate about this.
Well,
Evan, it makes me crazy. These kind of regulations that the industry can get away with.
Fred Forsberg is the farmer and owner at Honey Hill, and talking about the issues of labeling, etc. Dennis LaPelle is my guest in studio, a farmer from Lakestone Family Farms, as we talk about the way animals are raised, the quality of the care, humane treatment or not, and in many ways, Dennis and Fred are right there on the same page with that. And he talked about the terms that don't mean anything. Dennis, all natural.
Yeah, all natural. Everything is all natural.
Right.
You know, go to the center of the supermarket where everything's processed and packaged and it all says all natural. So, you know, go figure.
Okay, all natural. We've already hit cage-free.
So yeah, we talked about cage-free.
Cage-free. Yeah. When you see it for chicken, don't think cage-free means anything special.
Right. Well, it still means something. I mean, it's important, but it's context.
It's context.
Yeah, context.
They may not be telling you the whole story.
Right. Just because it's cage-free, it doesn't make it great.
Vegetarian diet could mean that the chickens
have
never been
access,
outside.
Right. No outdoor access.
No outdoor access. And then a question from one of our listeners on Twitter. What does organic chicken mean?
Okay. So organic chicken is I'm USDA organic as well as certified by NOFA New York Certified Organic LLC. So we have to follow husbandry standards in addition to any other farming, you know, our normal farming practices. So our requirement is 1 1/3 square feet per bird that we need to maintain for our meat birds. And so there's that space issue then. Anything that chickens need to eat needs to be certified organic. So any grain ration that we provide for them needs to be certified organic. The pasture that they're on needs to be certified organic, meaning we are not allowed to use any chemical fertilizers or pesticides on the land 3 years prior to putting any animals on it, which is the same for our vegetables 3 years prior. And it also is with my NOFA certification, goes as far as a humane processing, the way the animals are slaughtered and packaged. Everything needs to be approved by the certifying agency that you're following a humane standard.
NOFA is what?
NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farming Association.
Okay, so before I get back to the phones, Maureen and Gene, we're coming to you guys next, but let me also say that there have been questions online about what about Wegmans. And so reach out to Wegmans. They tell us they are certainly concerned about the way animals are raised and directed us to their animal welfare philosophy online. Let me go ahead and read that from Wegmans. And there's one specific question I have for Dennis that he'll help us understand a little bit more. But this is quoting from Wegmans on their animal welfare philosophy. Quote, "Raising animals for food in a humane way is, to our way of thinking, the only way it should be done. Mistreating animals is wrong, and our focus must go beyond whether food is safe, wholesome, sustainable, and affordable, all of which must be taken into account. We closely follow the work of academic scientists studying animal behavior and have taken that information and talked with our supplier partners to consider whether standards are high enough. Many of our suppliers have relied on the advice of Temple Grandin and other experts like her. As there is better science, we better understand how animals respond to their environment. Wegmans works with only a few supplier partners for its own brand of meat, poultry, and eggs. In every case, we investigate their operations from beginning to end before we choose them. We personally visit their facilities and evaluate them with our own eyes. Once chosen, Wegmans brand suppliers must conduct periodic welfare audits. These third-party audits include objective, measurable criteria that are based on best practices developed by recognized animal welfare experts. Audit results are provided to Wegmans, and we review them. And when science teaches us something new, we encourage our suppliers and the industry to follow." Dennis LaPelle, they mentioned Temple Grandin. That's a name that most will not be familiar with. Temple Grandin is who?
Temple Grandin is, she's a rancher, animal rights activist. I don't know her full story. I know there's a movie made about her a couple years ago, and you know, she seems to be a person that, as far as I know, everyone seems to really like. I didn't see the movie. I didn't really read her story, so I don't know, you know, too much about her. You know, there's a lot of other people out there who do good things in farming too. You know, that's all I can say for that.
Okay, so again, Wegmans saying many of their suppliers rely on the advice of Temple Grandin, and if you want to learn more about Temple Grandin's ideas on raising food, Grandin.com, Grandin.com. Maybe give you a little insight into how Wegmans chooses their suppliers. Let's go ahead and grab Maureen and Victor. Go ahead, Maureen.
Hi. I'm finding this very interesting. My question is about the slaughter. If you raise them humanely and treat them humanely throughout their lives, but then they go through hell right before they die, it kind of negates the whole process. So have you followed your animals through the process to make sure that is all humane?
I actually do the process myself.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we do. We're soup to nuts, the whole thing. We get the birds at a day old, and they're with me. I gather the chickens the night before in the dark when they're sleeping is the best time to gather them. They're docile. They go willingly. It's not stressful for them. They only one or two out of the whole 50 that we'll process at a time will flap their wings. They'll basically sleep their night in a crate that we leave on the grass. It helps them to clean out their system before we slaughter. And then we bring them inside. We start at usually 6 a.m. So right as the sun comes up, we're getting moving. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a very humane practice. There's others who would, I'm sure, disagree. But compared to how it's done commercially, I think that we have a pretty good thing. There's no transportation, so the animals are not in any distress. We move them about 200 feet from where they're pastured to where they're slaughtered. So it's a very calm process. We have a lot of reverence for the animals too. We're very thoughtful about the process. It's a very pensive moment, especially the first time every season. Because we are pasturing, we're not raising them through the winter. It's obviously a warm weather thing, so we start in March, we finish in October. It's definitely a heavy day. You know, Thursday, we usually do it on Thursday mornings, and it's a heavy day around the farm. You know, we acknowledge the fact that we are taking life, and we are, you know, we're thoughtful of that and that process, and we do have reverence for that.
Maureen, right, does that answer your question?
It absolutely does. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Just one quick follow-up on that. You know, Michael Pollan wrote in his book on Divorce Dilemma about the fact that most of us who do care, even those of us who really do care about the way the animals are treated, most of us will never kill the animals that we eat. And he made the point that, I don't know if he said maybe we should, but essentially it can be hard for people, but, it is part of the process. And it's interesting to me to hear you, Dennis, say, because you have to somewhat be desensitized to it. When you've got 1,000 chickens a year, you have to be a little bit desensitized. But you do sound like someone who is thoughtful about it.
Well, the first time I ever did it, I was a volunteer at a farm, and I had to sit down. You know, it's a very heavy thing to end the life of an animal, you know. It's important that you're thoughtful and careful as to what you're doing, and it's done appropriately. And so there's a lot of stress as a human being approaching that situation and making sure that it's getting done right, because you don't want that animal to suffer. And it's really what it boils down to, is the suffering of the animals.
Before I grab one last phone call, bigger production companies, again, I don't want to speak for them, and you're not here to speak for them,
no.
but their standards are probably different than yours.
I would think so, yes. They're not being handled by a person gently placed into the situation that they're being placed into as they're getting ready to be prepared for meal, you know.
This is Gene in Rochester. Go ahead, Gene.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. You read earlier Wegman's statement about the treatment of animals and so forth and their suppliers. But it reminded me that a few years ago there was a case that went to court of somebody who broke into a Wegmans facility, where I think it was the egg-laying facility, and they didn't do any damage, but they did produce a video. And for that, that person, I don't remember all the details, but he was prosecuted and received significant jail time, and Wegmans was very much behind that. And I just wonder a little bit about the transparency of Wegmans at the same time that they're showing concern for, supposedly concern for the treatment of animals.
Well, Gene, you know, thanks for the call. I think it's hard for me to follow that, to sort of address that without Wegmans being here, and I don't want to be unfair to Wegmans. Fair enough. Dennis, I don't know if you're familiar with the case he's referring to.
I do recall hearing something about it, but I don't know all the, I don't really know any of the details, and I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have any basis to know anything about it. All I would say is that, it's any larger company has to produce to stock their shelves. So it's important as a consumer to do your homework to the best of your ability. And if you can, meet the farmer and talk to your farmer. you know, that's a really good way to truly understand where your food is coming from and what the practices are that go into it.
How often do you eat food that isn't from Lakestone?
Oh, quite frequently. We don't grow all of our own stuff. So, like, we had a potato crop failure this year, so I have to get potatoes from friends, and I barter for meat and things like that that we don't raise, if pork and
I think where I'm getting the going here is, give me a sense for your process. I got about a minute left. Give me a sense for your process when you are going elsewhere for food. You've got farm friends, so that makes it a little easier, too. Do you do a lot of bartering? I mean, are you always aware, almost always aware of the food you're eating, where it's coming from?
For the most part. I mean, I still buy pretzels. I mean, there's some things that you just, there's no, I live in America and I live in a consumer society, and there's things that I like. So I do have a lot of transcendences and deviations from the stuff that I raise.
When it comes to going out to eat, do we not ask enough about where restaurants are sourcing?
I cannot go out to eat hardly at all anymore. I just can't find food that I agree with in restaurants. It's very difficult, and I don't live close enough to Rochester to come easily to some of the nicer places in town.
Very interesting. I mean, is it essentially a case of you either don't know where the food's coming from or you don't agree with the way it's being raised?
Yes, especially in regards to meat. So oftentimes if I do go out, I will try to get some sort of wild-caught fish. And that's the best I can do for protein at a restaurant, I guess, is to try and get fish.
What you're describing, by the way, is more effort. But, you know, that's part of being human who votes with your wallet, right?
Right.
We kind of vote our values.
The reason I started raising chicken was because of things like this, the way that the chicken is raised. And it's not just chicken. It's pork. It's beef. It's all of it. It's all been turned into a manufacturing process rather than a farm.
We didn't even get to gestation crates, which is I'm going to do on a different day here as we look into that issue, because New Jersey is looking at a gestation crates bill. New York actually has one, we found out, that hasn't gone anywhere. But so we'll follow up on that as we look at food from a lot of different angles. But Dennis LaPelle is out at Lakestone Family Farm. Real briefly online, they'll find you where?
LakestoneFamilyFarm.com.
Thank you for taking the time, Dennis.
Thanks
for our
me.
Callers. Fred Forsberg, thank you at Honey Hill. Thank you, I always say Mike Glass. It's Mike Black. He's behind the glass. He's our engineer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Member Supported Public Radio.